that, we bring you the Friday Profile. And today it is a privilege to get to sit down and talk to a true patriot of this country. That's a former Deputy Minister of Finance, Mthembisi Jonas. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I wish we had cameras in here so people can see how relaxed you are. You're wearing shorts, very trendy sneakers, and a denim jacket. Or denim shirt. Very unexpected. I didn't expect this kind of informality.
Informality is part of unemployment.
What are you doing these days?
Well, I kind of doing a lot of things. I write papers. I kind of give talks, and I continue with activism to promote a better South Africa.
Yes. Well, In a way, I wasn't too surprised because preparing for today, I looked at some of your pictures. Do you know how many pictures there are where your shirt, the top button of your shirt is undone and your tie is loosely hanging around the neck? There are plenty of those. So ready to do away with that formality.
Yes.
Bruce Whitfield even says that you're like a naughty boy in the back of the classroom.
We used to have an interesting poem, a delight in disorder.
Mm-hmm.
It's always nice to have something that is show that you are relaxed and you are yourself, I mean, rather than conforming 100%.
Absolutely. Mm. Yes. So there's so many things to touch on, but I wanted to explore your early years. You grew up in Uitenhage.
Yes, I did.
And then you went to school in Port Elizabeth.
Both Uitenhage and Port Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah. I see. But you began your activism at the age of 14. You led a number of activities in Port Elizabeth. You helped to launch some of the underground structures in the Eastern Cape. And having read a book about MK, it was evident that the Eastern Cape had some of the most solid and some of the most effective MK underground structures. They weren't without controversy, but they also had their effectiveness.
Yes. Well, I mean, in the early days, we started off as in black consciousness, by the way. I mean, and in the 70s, early 70s and late 70s, we were very young. Mainly groomed by our teachers, interestingly. And it was one of those things that you get educated but understand that we have to fight to change the situation in our country.
Yeah.
So most of us actually were groomed in that context. Then later on, obviously, we moved in and graduated out of that into real ANC politics. And because I think black consciousness was useful because it actually introduced the struggle as a way of life and an attitude towards the world. And that was crucial for us at that moment.
Mm. And when you talk about black consciousness, there were certain movements, of course, that came about as a result of that. When you think of Azaso, which came about after SASO, and this also had links with the UDF, you know, where there was this broad movement of different organizations affecting change and encouraging activism. So what do you think of the activism? Currently, the state of activism in South Africa.
Look, I mean, the bad thing about 94, I mean, is that I think the ANC and the liberation movements demobilized communities.
Hmm.
In part, I think it was because there was a lot of capacity required in government, formal government structures. There was a lot of debate about whether you sustain UDF or you don't, but eventually people realized that actually you need to build ANC structures, legal ANC structures, and etc. But the victim was mobilization of communities, conscientization of communities and citizens around that, because everybody assumed that government will always do the right thing, based on the constitution, based on the freedom charter, etc., etc. I think what has happened recently was a very direct demonstration that actually we were wrong. I mean, once in power, people could get corrupted. People's views change because I think there is a connection between your material position and your outlook, social outlook. So people started like participating in big deals, and obviously that began to drive the life of many of us. And I think it was naivety on our part to think that will be able to resist the temptation that is brought about by being in power.
Right.
And it was naivety. Or maybe it was also maybe just arrogance of South Africans to think that we are unique.
Yes.
Because we have evidence, you know, in many countries. The liberation movement degenerating into oligarchs, degenerating into corrupt organizations of elite.
Yes.
It has happened elsewhere. We could have known, but I don't think we did. What you are seeing now, I think, is a beginning of realization that we need to go back to the grassroots, mobilize society.
Yes.
Also begin to create a new agenda for the country that is different.
Mm-hmm. I think of the street committees that used to be there, but it can also go wrong, like what we saw in the Val, for instance, where they can morph into gangs. So if we are to go back to what we used to do, it would have to be with the new view, as you said, with the new agenda, with the new purpose. But are you encouraged with what we're seeing now? There seems to be a resurgence where we have NGOs taking on these political struggles.
I am. I think part of the, I think, problem sometimes is that liberation movements, normally, they occupy a high moral high ground, mm-hmm. basically. I mean, mm-hmm. When they get into government, the assumption is that they maintain that. The reality, of course, is that it is the people, the citizens, that are supposed to be determining and defining morality,
yeah.
not government.
Yeah.
And therefore, government is supposed to take cue from society, as it were. Mm-hmm. And I think the movements that are emerging now and are beginning to reshape the political agenda and realign politics in South Africa, mm-hmm. and also bringing back this notion that politics are bigger than political parties. And right. party, I mean, it's very clear, party barons would always have party interest as opposed to societal interests.
Mm, mm. So where did this activism in you as a young child, how did it come about?
Well,
because you continue to be an activist.
It was, I think, in part, I think we had, I think, a host of teachers who were quite good, actually. I mean, in that sense. I mean, And many of them, I think, we ended up in exile with, we ended up in prison with. But I think they were very, very focused in ensuring that we are conscientized beyond just learning what was supposed to be learnt in the classroom. But I think more important for me was that they valued education. I think if you think about it, part of the problem of the youth that is active in politics today mm-hmm. is that because the movement is weak, political education within the movement is not almost there. I mean, it's like absent.
Right.
And therefore, they don't have a framework within which to think.
Precisely.
And in many instances, they are groomed and developed as mirrors of the leaders of the movement.
Mm.
And mirror that is not very great. Actually, images that are not very great. So do you see this bombastic and like shallow and et cetera, I mean, leaders in many instances mm-hmm. who are ready to attack anybody who differs with them.
Yes. And looking at these different various organizations, the formation of the UDF, for instance, the formation of AZASO and all of that, when you speak to people who are your peers, you hear about ideological debates that used to take place. Mm. It doesn't feel like there is that culture at the moment. I mean, not being within, never having been immersed within politics, this is just an anecdotal observation. Do we have that robust kind of ideological debate that's required?
It is absent. I mean, it is definitely absent. But of course, we also attempt to temper with that a little bit because I think nostalgia also can confuse.
Yes, yes.
I think we globally also, I mean, there's been a very real sense in which traditional, conventional, ideological postulations have been challenged fundamentally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you see what has happened to communism, what is happening to capitalism, I mean, people are grappling with the fact that actually even those who believed in capitalism are beginning to realize that actually it is excluding vast majorities of people and therefore creating social discontent in many countries. And there's a new thinking. People are becoming more pragmatic to say, how do we effect inclusion as we sustain what we thought was ideologically correct? I mean, the same most socialist countries are realizing that, I mean, you have to grapple with markets.
Mm. Mm.
So if you think about it, traditional, conventional wisdom would say shy away from markets. But, I mean, Chinese, for instance, are engaging with markets. They realize that actually...
Mm.
You need a socialist transition that actually engages with markets and realize that markets are central,
mm-hmm.
and they have to be engaged and developed and widened and deepened.
Right.
And these are all new things, if you think about it. And in South Africa, again, it's the same thing, I mean, that you're finding. Part of the weakness, of course, in South Africa is that we haven't changed the fundamental structure of the economy and society. Whether that was the ANC's agenda or not, it's something that could be debated.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't changed the structure of the economy. So our economy is still based on commodity trade as essentially.
Yeah.
But there's also been an interesting trend in our economy that you've seen the employment increasingly beginning in the financial and services sector, and the primary sector shrinking.
Mm-hmm.
And the secondary sector shrinking and the tertiary sector increasing. So that should signal something about the fact that we are driving a growth model that is not working.
Yes, where we're not focusing or thinking about this fourth industrial revolution and what we need to be investing in, still hanging on to farming, agriculture, mining, the primary or old industries, as you said. Let's take a break, and I'll read through your SMSs and your tweets as this afternoon, our Friday profile is Mcebisi Jonas. Thinking about this afternoon, had to go back to a quote that a patriot must always be ready to defend his country against the government, and it just sat so beautifully in thinking about the contribution that Mcebisi Jonas has made to South Africa. And we continue our conversation, not that much time left with our time with Mcebisi Jonas, the former Deputy Minister of Finance, and as he says now, he's unemployed but continuing with activism work. I was talking to a friend whose father was also involved in the movement, and he hasn't been well of late. And I said, what's wrong? This is a second return to the hospital. And he says, yeah, doctors keep running tests and so on, but the rest of us think that it's heartbreak, that his heart is broken. How is your heart?
Now, all of us are saddened by the state of the ANC.
Mm-hmm.
But also, more importantly, I think the big lesson for me is that, I mean, coming from a liberation movement, the liberation movement is always your primary point of departure. Actually.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this period has shown that the country and the nation is bigger than the ANC. And I think that lesson must sink to all activists in the country. Now, the question is, do we defend the ANC or do we defend the country?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, in the defense primarily is about defending our democracy, defending our country, expanding the fortunes of South Africans, and deepening democracy effectively.
Mm-hmm.
If in doing that we defend the ANC, then that's good. But I think that there should be a sense that in our notion of politics now,
yes,
nation and the country and society should take primacy.
Sure. It's going to be painstaking work ahead for all of us. There is a question from Kecha saying, complimenting you, by the way, and saying I want his opinion on Kwesi. It's not a direct question, but I suspect ahead of the campaigning that's been going on, a lot of politicians have been put in the spot about where they stand on this question.
Look, it's probably a sad part of our history.
Mm-hmm.
And it will always be a sore point.
Mm.
But it also raises a broader question about women in society. Because I think the whole reaction and approach to Kwesi was in part, I mean, a reflection of where society stands when it comes to gender issues.
Mm.
And part of, I think historically we've said, part of what we are about is also a revolution about gender relations. And we verify both in terms of thinking, but also in terms of action.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that story would always be a sore point. By the way, I know Kwesi. at a personal level.
Yes.
So I think it's a very sad moment in the history of our country.
Fezekile Khuzwayo will forever remember her. Now, who are the Jonases, by the way? Abubai.
I come from Jotun Lake, so I'm probably not a traditionalist. I must say that up front.
so we're not going to get along.
I probably more value the fact that I'm a part of the proud South African nation.
Mm-hmm.
And, because I think we must resist the temptation to promote ethnicism. Because I think the one of the worst consequences of this period is that ethnicism has come back forcefully. And racism, by the way, the ANC historically is a non-racial organization.
Mm-hmm.
Ethnicity has never been part of our makeup, I mean, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Now today, I mean, you just look at the optics, just the optics of what we do. It tells you that the signals are very clear.
Mm.
I wouldn't be surprised that some leaders see themselves primarily in ethnic terms before they see themselves in nationalist terms.
Mm.
And that's the problem. And even the support that people get in the ANC now, if you look at leaders, you have leaders whose support is essentially
based
on ethnicism.
Mm.
And that's the danger we have. I think we have to fight ethnicism at all costs, and we must actually almost destroy it. Savora Machel used to say, for the nation to thrive, the tribe must die.
The tribe must die. So a lot of things have to die for the nation to thrive. Let's go to Michael quickly, calling from Bramley. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Zanya. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome.
Yes, I really love your guest in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
I respect him so much. A man of integrity, really.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't happy with the decision for him to resign from the parliament, because according to me, he could have stayed in the parliament and get those guys accountable within the work of the committee.
Okay. So why resign? Michael, thank you for your call.
Look, I mean, there's good work in parliament, and I think our parliament has come alive relatively from what it has been.
Mm.
It's not yet there, by the way. I must say, it's not yet there. Because there are two things that in strengthening parliament we should think about. I mean, one is about whom do you deploy to parliament?
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is about increasingly the world is complex. We need to look at capacity, we need to look at political orientation, we need to kind of really interrogate when we deploy people in these positions. That's one part. So, but it's getting there. I mean, it's getting there. The second part, of course, is that you still have a party democracy. That essentially, parliamentarians are voices to their parties.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, the accountability levels lies with their parties. And if parties are compromised, what happens?
What does that say about your relationship with the ANC then? Or how you feel within the organization?
I am an active member of the ANC, but I remain critical. And I think that's what revolutionaries are supposed to be. I mean, I always have an easier definition of a revolution. It's a critique of society.
Yes.
And if we lose that, and the ANC is supposed to be, by the way, it's supposed to be a critique of what's the status quo and seeking to change it. Now, when it ceases to do that, there are problems.
Mm.
It cannot be promoting the status quo. That's why I feel strongly that we need to revisit the growth model in our country. We need to change the social structure, because the growth model is still apartheid growth model.
Right.
The social structure is still apartheid social structure.
Mm.
So those are things that I think we need to probably, in a more detailed and nuanced way, deal with.
Sure. I think there's still so much we could look at, but I want your view on what's playing out at the moment with Steinhoff. You know, in your role, you used to engage a lot with CEOs and corporate SA, and this is a huge letdown.
Look, I mean, it's criminal, but to be frank, I mean, because I think overstating numbers is criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have a lot of investors who invest on the basis of the numbers that are out there.
Mm.
But it's a lesson. I mean, it's a very big lesson for all of us, for South Africans. I mean, KPMG question, for instance. And I do believe that there are a lot more companies that are playing roles that are questionable and generally. So when we talk about ethics and morality, mm-hmm. it applies to the private sector with the same force it applies to the public sector.
Right.
So accountability and regulatory, strengthening regulatory bodies is also important for the private sector. I mean, JSE must strengthen its oversight on companies listed on the JSE.
Absolutely. Would you ever consider taking up a provincial leadership role? Because there were calls for you to contest.
Look, I mean, there were two reasons. I mean, the first point is that, I mean, I tend to avoid being formalistic about leadership. I think and of course, sometimes when you get into an environment that is factionalist, you then, you know, just become another faction,
mm-hmm,
as it were. And I've been there, I mean, historically.
Yes.
So I think part of what I'm, at the moment, my orientation is really to work with everybody in society, all sectors of society, from religious leaders to, like, civil society, mm-hmm, NGOs, mm-hmm, private sector, etc., in a manner that seeks to unite South Africans, not divide them.
And finally, I do have to take headlines. What would your ANC, NEC look like?
Not in terms of names, I mean, but in terms of content.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to come, I hope, I mean, the conference should come up with a leadership that at least understands the need for renewal. Political and moral renewal of the ANC. The ANC needs to be modernized. It's still an archaic organization. And I know that the debate about it being liberation movement, it's a non-debate for me. It is contesting politics. It has to be accountable to the mass of South Africans. And you need leaders that are sensitive to that. But also you need leadership that understand that we must change the face of South Africa, and every South African must feel that we are in a different environment than apartheid environment. Thanks.
Thank you so, so much. It was a pleasure. It was an absolute pleasure. Lots of SMSs coming in. We will podcast it. Nigelo is already requesting for a podcast to be able to go back and listen again. That was our Friday profile. Mcebisi Jonas. We want